Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take a look at your pet's health on the show today with Dr. Bill Stork back with us on the show. He's the owner of the Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic and also the author of several books. Does a lot of writing and a lot of speaking as well. And we'll talk with him about keeping your pet at a healthy weight. We'll do that first, and we'll take your other pet care questions as well. What kind of foods do you feed your pets? Do you have treats for your pets, a lot of them? We'd like to have you part of the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Bill Stork, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, good morning, Larry. I'm glad to be here.
I suppose the first step to keeping a pet at a healthy weight is to know what they should weigh. How does a pet owner find that out?
Well, it's probably the first and most logical question that we get, especially way back in the puppy visits. And in 30 years, I've been looking for an intelligent and accurate answer with regard to puppies. And I have yet to find a formula that really holds up. I mean, a golden retriever puppy at 10 weeks of age, weighing 12 or 15 pounds, can eat, you know, 2.5 cups of food a day, which would be approximately the volume of food that we would use to maintain a 70-year-old adult golden retriever. But, you know, then again, I remember in eighth grade, I could eat 3 Big Macs, but can't get by with that anymore. So, for example, a 70-pound golden retriever, a very reasonable volume of food, in spite of what they might tell you, to keep them a 70-pound golden retriever would be in the vicinity of 2 to 2.5 cups a day. A round formula is their weight in kilograms times 30 plus 70. So that would leave a golden retriever in the vicinity of 1,000 or so calories per day. And we can usually count on most adult dog food to come in the vicinity of 400 calories a cup. Obviously, there's a great deal of variation. There's variation according to breed. There's variation according to activity, which clearly can make a dramatic difference as well.
So we have a lot of overweight pets out there, and I must, you know, we know it's the food probably that's the problem, and maybe not enough exercise. But commonly, what happens? Why do they get heavy?
Well, there's a 100 reasons, and of course, food is love, and oftentimes they will try and convince us that they need everything that we put in the bowl, everything that's in the bag that we filled that bowl out of, and everything that is on our plates when we get done eating, when in actuality, that's not the case. And first, I'll back up a little bit and speak to the consequences of excessive weight. And
yeah.
In cats, some of the big things that we see with regard to overweight cats are, the easy ones are diabetes. There is also a liver condition called hepatic lipidosis that can take place in dramatically overweight cats. Pancreatitis is a condition that we see in overweight cats, not to mention the musculoskeletal ramifications of cats being overweight. That is true, cats, dogs, or people. And cats are also are some of our patients that we take it really, really seriously. And as the years go marching by, and as we try and be smarter and more proactive, we really start talking to people early about overweight cats, because, man, you want to talk about mission impossible, attempting to take weight off of an obese cat is one heck of a challenge because it's really difficult to incorporate the element of exercise into a cat. And not to mention, we've had this famous patient years ago. His name was Bob, and Bob weighed 32 pounds. And Bob was owned by two engineers. And if you're familiar with the mentality of an engineer, they are very precise people. And when we calculated how many calories that cat needed to eat in order to take weight off, I'm pretty sure they were shaving kibble with a microtome in order to get them down to exactly what we remembered or we recommended. And we got Bob down to 28 and a half pounds from 32. And I'm convinced that Bob converted over to photosynthesis or something because we were barely feeding that cat. And still, he didn't go lower than 28 and a half pounds. With dogs, of course, we have all of those ramifications, all of those disease situations. And then there's the musculoskeletal concerns. We, as veterinarians, and I'm confident my colleagues see the very same thing, see a lot of dogs with hip and knee problems. And especially these labs and golden retrievers and German shepherds that are in their middle-aged years, really active, playing ball, plant, pivot, change directions. And if they're carrying an extra 20 pounds, an extra 15 pounds, that's like me carrying an extra 50 or 60 pounds. And it's hard on your hips. It's hard on your knees. So those are some of the things that are so important. But, you know, I think it's, as you said at the beginning, it's plain and simply a little less exercise. And, you know, this time of year, it's supposed to be cold and foreboding outside. And instead, it's a muddy mess outside. So if we try and take our dogs to the dog park or play Frisbee or something like that with them, we have to take them to the dog wash before we can bring them back inside, which presents a bit of a challenge. And then it all adds up. And like milk bones, for example, can contain an unbelievable number of calories and fat. Raw hides can contain a very significant amount of fat. And even if we're feeding a reasonable volume of food, when we add treats, cleaning the plates, a little extra something, you know, when we get done eating lunch or supper, and it can all add up.
Yeah, I imagine. Do you see what percentage, just probably a guess on your part, but I mean, how many overweight animals come to your clinic?
You know, honestly, I think there's been enough attention in the media and it's been talked about enough. Whatever the percentage is, I really feel that it's less than it used to be because people are increasingly more aware. But still, I feel a solid 30% of the pets that we see are overweight.
And how you, in your job, your role, you're a veterinarian. How do you help the pets and the people who have pets that are overweight?
Prevention is the easy answer because we'll spend a lot of time talking to clients about their pet's weight. It's one of the first things that I look at when a patient comes to us. You know, we look for weight change. Have they gained weight? Have they lost weight? All of which can be significant. But then, especially when they're adults and we have a really tight idea as far as how much they should be eating, then we get really specific about their recommendations and what they're feeding as far as food and treats and snacks and add-ons and things like that. But in cats, interestingly enough, cats can get really, really efficient. And as we talked about, I don't know about your cats, but cats can be darn near sessile organisms at times. But some of the things that we started to talk about more and more in cats is not as much how much we feed them, is how we feed them. And, you know, we're used to setting out a bowl of food and allowing the cats to graze throughout the day. But I talk to clients about making them work for their supper. put their food in a puzzle bowl or a busy bowl that they make for cats, or they make treat balls. So you put the food in the ball, screw the top on, and the cat's got to beat it around and roll it around the house in order to get the food to come out a little bit at a time. We also powerfully recommend that people meter their animal's intake, because it's very popular, it's very convenient to be able to simply feed them ad lib however much they want to eat. But from the beginning, it's really valuable to meter and measure how much they eat. You know, an adult, you know, the standard 10-pound cat should really not need much more than 2/3 of a cup of food per day.
Yeah. Well, the vet that I was going to a couple of years ago said, well, Tiger needed to lose a pound and Coco needed to gain a pound. And she was absolutely amazed the next year when I came back and Tiger had lost a pound and Coco had gained a pound. She said, how'd you do that? I said, well, Coco had been ill and then got better. So put some weight on. And Tiger, I just was careful about how much he got to eat.
In multi-cat households, and two cats is one thing. We have multi-cat households ranging from 2 or 3 cats to 23, and attempting to feed them individually and adjust the weights of one out of the herd gets to be a heck of a challenge.
Well, it's interesting with those two because they know which bowl is theirs. And when I feed them, even if one finishes before the other, they don't go poaching on the other one's bowl.
Well, that's mighty polite of them.
Yeah, I'm lucky that way, for sure. Well, if you have an underweight cat that, I mean, you're feeding it properly, I mean, maybe is that time to take, see you or another veterinarian?
It absolutely is. Underweight is a concern, and especially, you know, almost regardless of age, but there's lots of things we go looking for in underweight cats. Thyroid disease, kidney disease are top of mind for cats that spend time outside. There's always parasites that can be at work there.
So if Tiger loses any more weight, I guess I'll have to take him back in. Dr. Bill Stork, our guest today, he owns Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, has been a regular guest on our show quite a while now. It's always great to have him come by. Questions for him, give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today as we talk your pet's health with Dr. Bill Stork. Just a quick note, I hope you'll join WPR tonight at 7. We have live coverage of the 2023 State of the State Address by Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers. And after the governor, you'll hear from the Republican response from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss. And WPR Sean Johnson and PBS Wisconsin's Frederica Freiberg are your hosts for the special coverage. It's the State of the State Address tonight at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. And if you have a question for Dr. Bill Stork, I hope you'll join us right now. The number to call is 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Leslie in Cottage Grove. Hi, Leslie. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking this call. I have a question regarding our bonded pair of sister kitties. White cats, so this will exacerbate the issue. They spend a lot of time together, play, get a lot of exercise, and they also play fight. the larger one will bite the smaller one and on several occasions has made a puncture hole. When that happens, because they're still bonded, the larger one will lick the smaller one, lick the wounds, which seems to cause great infections. This time, one of the wounds was on the back of the neck, and even a cone would not protect it because the edge of the cone was on that wound, and she could move it forward and scratch it off. So my questions are, is it true that there's a lot of bacteria in a cat mouth? And at this point, we have not only a cone on this poor thing, but then a inflatable donut kind of thing behind it so she can't get at the wound. This has been since before Thanksgiving, so we're concerned about psychological damage.
As well. Okay. Leslie, thanks. What do you think, Dr. Bill?
Well, first of all, I think that I wish that my staff behaviorist named Mitzi was in on this telephone call as well, and we might be able to flesh things out even a little bit better, but I'll pinch hit as best I can. Yeah, I mean, cats' mouths are scary places, and cat bites, whether they are in cats or in your technician's finger, are serious business and not to be taken lightly. With regard to a bonded pair of cats that play rough, then you have yourself one heck of a challenge. And backing up a couple of steps, speaking in broad terms, of course, some of the things that can be beneficial is to check and absolutely ensure that anything that could resemble a limiting resource, and that could be litter boxes, food, cat trees, water sources, toys, etc., that you have multiple copies of anything that could be a limiting resource and that they are separated by as far as they can be. So a cat tree on one floor of the house, a cat tree on the other floor of the house. Litter boxes, the same thing. Water dishes that are separated, and preferably feeding them separately as well. Those things can make a difference. One of the other things that can make a difference in cats that are playing roughly is a pheromone product called Feel-Away. And Feel-Away is facial pheromone. When your cats rub their faces on doorways and pant legs and things like that, that's their way of marking the area, saying everything is okay. And they make a commercial version of this, which for years fell into the category of what this old practitioner called hocus pocus medicine. I was a little hesitant to speak out loud about its effectiveness, but we have seen some blinded situations. We've seen a household where there were multiple cats that were aggressive towards one another. We recommended Feel-Away. They followed our recommendation. Everything was going great. Client called us back and said, boy, the wheels have fallen off and the cats are back to fighting, which caused us to try and reset until we found out that his son needed to recharge his iPad and had unplugged the Feel-Away diffuser, because Feel-Away is available in a diffuser that you plug into the wall that lasts for a month. So those are my suggestions.
Leslie, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Kate from Fox Crossing, your turn. Hi, Kate.
Hi, good morning. I have an orange tabby cat, and we've had him for about 14 years. We got him from the pound, and he's always had a problem with getting colds regularly. He sneezes. And as of the last many months, he gets the colds a little bit more often, and when he sneezes, it gets like spatters of blood, and then it looks like he gets a bloody nose, and it doesn't seem to bother him. It doesn't seem to give him any pain. He just sneezes, but because we have a white tile floor, it's very evident. And then when you see him right after he sneezes, it looks like he has a bloody nose. I did take him to the vet, and the vet gave him a shot of like what we would consider prednisone, an antibiotic but it wasn't a good forecast long term. And I just thought if you had any other advice, if there's anything we could do, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a condition that we see fairly frequently, and chronic feline upper respiratory tract disease is quite common. It's prone to reoccurring. There are lots of cats that we treat in multiple occasions throughout their life. And then as they age, they become more and more frequent. And the symptoms that you're seeing spot on, we see fairly frequently. The challenge is to know exactly what is going on. This is a little bit of a diagnostic no man's land, because a radiograph of a cat's head and sinuses isn't necessarily going to give us any more information. We could do, you know, we could go all the way to the university and do an MRI, but even that doesn't change the options that we have available to us. These conditions can be chronic infectious, as in bacterial, and sometimes antibiotics can back them off for a while. They can be chronic infectious viral, in which case it's even more difficult to make a difference. There's antiviral treatments are not very specific and certainly minimally effective in the short term. And oftentimes what we end up doing, and what your veterinary did, is the same thing that we do fairly frequently, is it can be chronic infectious inflammatory. And with the steroid injection, we're simply looking to reduce the inflammation in those sinuses, in that upper respiratory tract. And you're right. I mean, oftentimes these cats just keep on trucking and they don't know the difference. I'm confident that your veterinarian also looked in your 14 or 15 year old cat's mouth to get a judge of dental health as well, because as you can imagine, a lot of old cats have dental disease, and that can communicate with the sinuses in that anatomic neighborhood and can contribute to sneezing blood and discharge and things like that. So, you know, when we're looking to prolong and ensure their quality of life, we kind of think more in terms of managing the condition as compared to stone cold curing it. And oftentimes some combination of antibiotics and steroids as needed can make a difference. But also, this is kind of a palliative thing. If you have a nice humid bathroom, for example, when family take a shower in a bathroom that you can not run the exhaust fan, sometimes moistened air can help them out significantly.
Yeah. There you go, Kate. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, Coco comes in the morning every morning when I go in to take a shower. Coco comes in and sits in the, he wants to sit in the bathroom when that shower is going, and it seems to really enjoy it. And he's one who occasionally will sneeze, not very often, but once in a great while.
There he's, Coco knows he's treating himself.
Yeah, he's treating himself. Although one night when he jumped on the bed and I was trying to sleep, I pretended I was asleep, and I can feel his face. He's looking right in my face from about 4 inches away, and then he sneezed.
Yeah, he'll never get that past a cat.
That got my attention. Rona and Cameron, thank you for calling. Hi, Rona.
Hi, good morning. I'm excited to ask this question. We've had cats all of our lives, and we now have a cat. She eats the same amount as all the other cats. She is active as much as the other cats, but our vet calls her statically obese. She was taken away from the mother pretty early, I think probably at about 5 weeks. And she's always had this constant wanting to be fed, which I don't do. But will you define statically obese a little better for me? And do you think it's really hopeless? Thank you.
Well, I don't know if I can define the condition any better than what your veterinarian did, but I'm definitely going to borrow his term for it, statically obese, because that is exceedingly descriptive. And as Larry and I talked about on the front end of the show, how old is he?
Oh, we lost him. We lost our caller.
Ronan. Okay. Well, I'll answer the question and regardless, and make a guess that it's a middle-aged cat. But the truth of the matter is these guys can get unbelievably efficient. And I made the joke that I think cats can switch over to photosynthesis at some point in time, because we've had cats that very diligent, very well-intentioned owners had limit fed these cats with low calorie dry food and canned food, which can be beneficial because it's relatively low in calorie content, high in moisture, fills them up, and still there they sit. They don't move around much. They don't require a lot of calories for maintenance. And then even when you put very few calories in them per day, that's where they stay.
I spent about $40 on a toy that is battery operated. That is looks like a circular piece of cloth over the top of this little round structure that has a rod coming out with a kind of a feather on the end. And when you push the button on top for 10 minutes, it goes around underneath the light cloth, and the cats love it. They jump around. They get a lot of extra exercise, I think, just playing with that. And it shuts off automatically after 10 minutes, and you can start it up again if you want or just let it go.
Well, that's another great suggestion. One of the most successful weight loss programs I've ever seen executed, good friends of ours had an overweight cat, and they lived in a big old Victorian that they had remodeled the attic, and they had a window that overlooked the lake. And that cat loved to sit in the attic and overlook the lake. So husband and wife together committed to 3 times a day each, picking up the cat and carrying it to the basement. And the cat had to traverse 6 flights of stairs to get back to its window. And lo and behold, that cat, actually everybody, husband, wife, and the cat, everybody got in tremendous shape.
I love that. Oh, man. Jeff in Madison, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Dr. Bill. Hey, Larry.
Hi.
Dr. Bill, you used to be my cat's vet out there in Lake Mills when he was about 6 months old. He's 17 now.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. He started doing something. I'm afraid I know the answer, but I want to run it by you. I do have an appointment for him for the local vet because I live way out in Cross Plains now. But he started, anytime he enters a new room, it's usually the living room or the bedroom where he sleeps, he bellows and screams and yells in this almost terrifying high pitch. And then there's a real low bellow, and I can't figure out what's going on with him.
Hmm. Well, and
he's 17.
Here we launch off into a discussion that seems to be recurring more than it used to. And the notion that cats can absolutely develop cognitive issues as they age. And it can be the sensors. It can be the fact that they're not seeing things as well as they used to. It can be that they're not hearing or smelling things as well as they used to. Or it can be the hard drive. It can be that they are not necessarily perceiving things as well as they used to. And your veterinarian, when you take them in, will do a real thorough physical exam and examine all of those things, look for medical underpinnings to those situations, like kidneys, livers, and thyroid issues as well. But then there are absolutely some things that we can help. It's really difficult, you know, for goodness sakes, if we could affect cognitive issue and dementia in our cats, we'd be doing it in people. But there are some things that we can do to help mellow them out as well. So there may be some things that we can do to help that situation out, Jeff.
So some medications you're thinking maybe, Dr.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We use things like gabapentin, which is a neuropathic pain reliever, but it's also a mild sedative. And it's not unheard of for us to use fluoxetine/Prozac on older cats, because we hear about cats that sundown. We hear about cats that react differently to things that they've known their entire life. But your vet will also talk to you about, you know, the environment, making sure food is very readily available. Water is very readily available. Litter boxes are very readily available. They'll also look to ensure there's not pain, arthritis at the root of it all, because when we're encountering a situation that we may not be able to affect directly, for example, cognitive/dementia in my cat, well, maybe my cat is also painful. And there is a really cool new-ish drug out there that we can use on arthritic cats. So if he is a little bit painful, he is a little bit arthritic, and we remove that metric, then the whole machine feels better.
Yeah. Good points. Jeff, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way. I haven't mentioned the number in a while, so we've got lots of open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And with emails, we've got Shirley and Madison emailing us. Can you comment on UTIs and or crystals in cat's urine? She has a female 10-year-old cat. She just got over a UTI infection. And when Shirley took her to the vet, he said, oh, she was in here a year ago with the same thing. She's miserable for about a week. Now seems to be back to her happy self.
Good news. And yes, for a variety of reasons, urinary tract issues, meaning urinary tract infection, urinary tract inflammation, and crystals in urine are the kinds of things that have a tendency to reoccur, Shirley. And the things that can be beneficial include doing the best that you can to reduce stress in your environment. And that gets back to some of the components we were talking about before: multiple litter boxes, availability of litter boxes, food, water, cat trees, and stuff like that. How it is that we feed them can make a difference, including attempting to get as much moisture into their diet as possible so as to dilute their urine, so as to diminish the incidence of crystals. But I'm also a big fan. I have a very low threshold for recommending prescription foods that are called dissolution diets. Now, if you want to start a protest to the companies that make these foods and charge what they do for them, then I will lead the charge, because a lot of times these foods are really, really expensive. But I bet treating the urinary tract infection, or especially if the crystals aggregate to form uroliths or stones in the bladder, it really gets expensive and exceedingly uncomfortable on the cat. So those dissolution diets can make a big difference.
Yeah, Coco had that same sort of issue, and in fact had to have, at one point, had surgery to remove his penis.
Oh, boy. A perianal urethrostomy.
Whew. That was caught my attention at the checkbook, for sure. But he has recovered pretty well from it. So seems to be doing just fine, and no more. I haven't seen an infection in over a year or so. Oh, that's good. Sherry emailed. She just moved away from her vet who specializes in cats, and the vet was fastidious about her cats getting their teeth cleaned since the procedure requires anesthesia. Sherry's a little nervous about going to a new vet, but how important is dental cleaning for cats?
One of the most important things that we do, and there are a few things, depending on the nature of your cat, that you can do to prolong the intervals between dental cleanings. And at the risk of sounding like a salesman for the food manufacturers, there is a food out there. It is a prescription food called the dental diet. That is one of those things that has exceeded my expectations by a factor of several. It's now been a tool that we've had available to us for quite a while. And what I recommend to many of my clients to do is to not necessarily feed the dental diet entirely, but to mix that in with their normal food. And the structure of the kibble is such that if your cat is a cruncher, it can really make a big difference and to scrub the tartar on their teeth.
I had that same issue with Tiger, the cat, and the vet said you got to get his teeth cleaned. And she suggested putting him on greenies.
Yep.
And a year later, when I took him back, she said, oh my gosh, his teeth are completely clean.
Yeah, if cats are crunchers, it makes a big difference. But, you know, if it gets to the point that there is heavy tartar on the teeth and periodontal disease and gum recession, yeah, and tooth abscesses and stuff like that, the dental becomes necessary. And I can tell you, Sherry, that no one is made more nervous about anesthesia than your veterinarians. And that's why we take all the precautions that we do during surgery.
Yeah. Our guest today, Dr. Bill Stork. He is the owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, the author of three books, and he does blogs and many other things as well. Great to have him with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at your pet's health on the show today with our guest, Dr. Bill Stork of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining in today. Bill, Amy from Milwaukee emails, curious about how you feel about giving a dog human food as treats in moderation versus dog treats. And her examples, things that she's probably given her dog perhaps, include small pieces of apple, small pieces of watermelon, and canned green beans, low salt and rinsed.
Well, Amy from Milwaukee, I don't think you can argue with that. And when it comes to giving dogs people food as treats and people food as snacks, If I were to poo-poo that notion, it would make me a hypocrite. So the things that you are feeding are exceedingly safe. Just an editorial, the big things that we look to avoid, aside from the things that are toxic that many of us are aware of, things like grapes and raisins and stuff like that, but we're really cautious about fat in excess, because fat in excess can set the stage for a condition called pancreatitis, which can be really brutal for dogs and cats. But I'm a fan of little bits of human food here and there, especially as I think you're feeding your dogs more healthy than I eat.
Rose in Cumberland, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So I have a big orange cat, and he's losing hair right at the back of his back, right where his back and his tail come together. I brought him to the vet, and they said it was anal glands that were irritating him, so they said they emptied him, and he should be good to go. But he's still losing hair. I have three other cats, and they're not losing hair at all. Sometimes it looks like he's, like, biting it too hard, where he's kind of getting, like, little scabs.
Yeah.
But it's just him. It's not the other ones. And I use the same flea and tick repellent that I've always used for him and the other cats, and I've never had any problems with it. So I'm just trying to figure out what's going on with him so he's not losing his hair, because he looks like an ugly rat.
Back there.
Man, we can't have that. Rose, how old is your cat?
About 6 or 7. We got him from my husband's cousin.
Okay. Yeah, and easily a middle-aged cat. So when they are losing hair, when they're biting fur from themselves in that anatomic location, our first hope is that it's irritation as a result of anal glands. When it doesn't turn out to be irritation as a result of the anal glands, then the water gets a little more muddy and the possibilities get a little bit more broad. And the condition that you are describing is feline hyper-grooming, of which there are lots of different permutations of. And feline hyper-grooming, man, it has presented to us anywhere from my cat is chewing the hair off around the base of its tail. I've seen cats that every hair follicle on their body that they could access was denuded and naked. I mean, we've seen cats, almost the entire thing was naked.
Boy.
Other cats will lick their belly and things like that. And the range of potential causes include behavior. When you talk about having a multi-cat household, if there are stress and territory and things like that going on within the house, then that can absolutely contribute to it. We talk about allergies and things like that, but man, that is a real moving target to try and pin those things down. I bet that if you were to go back to your veterinarian and report that the anal gland situation did not work, then they would take one of a few different approaches. One, when you describe those crusts, it is suggestive that as a result of the hyper-grooming and plucking of the hair, they've got a bit of an infection going on. That's secondary. What you need to try and do is figure out what the root cause is. And sometimes we try and use behavioral modifications. Sometimes we'll try and use things like gabapentin, which is the neuropathic pain reliever and slight sedative that we talked about in earlier cases. Sometimes we'll use steroids, and we don't always know exactly why they work, but they oftentimes do. But whatever you do, don't go tell your veterinarian that the guy on the radio said you ought to use steroids on your cat, because I don't want to be diagnosing your cat from Lake Mills that's in Cumberland's. But I'm just saying that you bet. I mean, these things can be a little tenacious, but we can usually help out.
Good luck, Rose. Thank you for calling. Diane in Black Duck, Minnesota. We go to you now. Hi, Diane.
Well, hello. I'm glad that we can talk.
Well, I'm glad to have you with us. What can we do for you?
Well, it took me a while to find out, how to get back to Wisconsin NPR. I love it. So I'm listening every day again. You have me for life.
Thank you.
Well, I have two dog questions. One is that I have four. Two of the girls like to eat feces.
Yeah.
How can you prevent that? And it's usually fresh.
Yeah. All right. And the other one?
The other question is, the youngest one, who eats poop once in a while, she also is chewing off her cords. And I've never had a poolie that chewed off cords. And I don't know what to do to prevent it.
Chewing off cords as in electrical cords or?
No, no. Her cords on her body because she's a corded breed. And it's on her upper thigh, her legs.
Yeah, okay. All right. Gotcha.
Okay. Two different things here to talk about.
You bet. So I thought we were just going to answer cat questions today, but I guess we're okay to diversify even from across the river. And I find the conversation with regard to how to make my dogs not eat poop. That's always an entertaining discussion. You know, how can we make it seem distasteful for them to eat stool? But clearly they perceive things a little bit differently than we do. And the first thing we do is try and rule out medical issues. It takes some pretty dramatic medical issues to cause dogs to want to eat their poop. Some pretty dramatic dietary deficiencies or gastrointestinal situations. And I bet it's not that. I bet it is straight up. My dogs are eating the other dog's stool. And some of the over the top recommendations that have existed over the years are, there's a product called Forbid, and just love this. You add this to your dog's food so that his stool will be distasteful to the other dogs. Very seldom has it worked. There are recommendations with regard to give your dog peppermint, feed them peppermint so their stool is less tasteful to the other dog. Very seldom seen that work. I've seen recommendations to apply meat tenderizer to the stool in the yard so as to turn the dog off. Very seldom seen it work. At the risk of sounding simplistic, there's a couple of different approaches, one of which is you have to be there and you have to train the dog on a very solid leave it, drop it. And you can't do that remote control. You have to start from the beginning and you have to train them on a leave it or a drop it that then can work by remote control. And here again, at the risk of sounding overly simplistic, you got to keep them picked up. And I have known dogs that will follow the other dog around, and as soon as it drops, they're on it. And in those situations, literally, you have to put one dog out, let him do his business, pick it up, and then turn the other dog out. Which, if you've got four dogs in the household, goodness gracious, do you have your work cut out for you? And I have heard that you have winters over there in Minnesota. And tough sledding there. But when we talk about dogs that are chewing their own fur, and is the dog that chooses cords, chews his own fur, is this also one of the dogs that is eating stool?
Yes. And I think the eating of the stool is a learned experience from her mother.
Yeah, it very well could be. And the best suggestions that I can make with regard to that is, you know, that could be a displacement behavior. That could be a display of boredom. And yes, they have the other three dogs that they get to interact with, but you know, that can be a territory issue, that can be a behavior issue, that can be a subordinate issue. I'm wondering if that's not a straight up behavioral issue that might have more nuance than we can tackle even on the Larry Mueller show. That one might require a local behaviorist to help you sort through that.
Yeah. a certified applied animal behaviorist might be in your future, Diane, if there's one that you can work with. Actually, it would be good for a lot of reasons. Having dogs, you know, learn a quick, you know, really listen when you tell them to stop or stay or whatever can be very pleasing in the long run. So good luck, and thanks for listening from Black Duck, Minnesota, Diane. I appreciate it very much. Dr. Bill Stork will be with us, by the way, right up until 12:30 today on the show. So certainly we look forward to that. We will take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back to talk with Mary and Kathy and Vivian and everybody else. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your pet's health on the show today, Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Bill Stork. He owns and operates Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic, works with both small and large animals, and invite you to join in, and I hope you do. Call in with your questions or shoot an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take some calls. Mary in Cassville will give you a chance now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Larry, Dr. Bill. Another dog question, sorry. What is the best dog food to buy, not from a vet, but, you know, from a store? What's the best one to get?
Oh, boy, Mary. That's a big, broad question. And I'll just take a swing at it. One of my favorite brands of food is Fromm. And some of the reasons why I'm a big fan of Fromm food is because it's made right here in Wisconsin, just up the road from us. The company's been around for 150 years. I don't know that they've ever had a recall. Their quality control, their consistency of ingredients is over the top. Hopefully they're listening and they'll contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio as a result of this free plug. But there's lots of good food out there. And, you know, some of it's going to be dependent upon your particular dog and age and breed and energy and activity and things like that. But there's a recommendation.
Just along those lines, there's a dog trainer emailed that they advise not feeding your dog from a dish, but instead give them food throughout the day as incentives or treats during training or as rewards for good behavior. They're wondering if the dog feels hungry all day. Their dog acts hungry all the time, even after being fed 3/4 of a cup of food twice a day. Could not feeding him on a schedule cause other problems?
Could feeding him on a schedule cause other problems? There again, that one is a little bit hard to answer with. Out more details like the age and the breed and the environment of the dog and what it is that they are feeding the dog and what other kinds of stimulation the dog is getting as far as exercise and going for walks and things like that. But if I have a dog that acts as if it is hungry throughout the day, then some of the things that you can do for them, especially if they're already being fed an appropriate amount of food, an appropriate number of calories to keep their weight stable, is you can feed them in one of the busy bowls or puzzle bowls that we were talking about earlier. There are these crazy inventions that I never thought I would say out loud called snuffle mats, in which case you literally take the kibble and you spread it into food that the dogs have to dig and root around and work for their dinner. Those things can make a big difference.
Mary, again, thank you. Kathy in Black River Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I have about a Labrador. He's not quite three yet. And for the last, well, since he's been over one, he has, I don't know that I'd call them seizures. It's more like, it looks like he has like a Charlie horse in his face. And it only happens about once a month, and it's frequently after he's been playing heavily, you know, running around with the neighbor dog, or we've been playing catch with him, or he's been swimming a lot. And he'll be running, and then he'll just kind of stop, and he'll sit down, and his head will kind of twist a little bit, and then he gets it looks like a swelling on one side of on the top of his head. It almost is like a muscle cramp, and it gets pretty hard and tense, and it lasts usually less than a minute, and then he's just kind of slow and lethargic for a while after that, but he's fine otherwise. We've talked to our vet about it, and she said she almost needs to see it happening to really get a good handle of what it is. I mean, you don't go the full all route of MRIs or whatever it is, because unless it's happening, and it's only about once a month. So I was just wondering if you had any suggestions of what could be causing something like that. Is it a seizure?
Well, I have one observation, and that is that your observations are most excellent, because you have put together the frequency, which is one of the first questions that we've asked. You put together the duration of the event, and I love your description with regard to it looks as if he is having a Charlie horse in his face. And that too is pretty suggestive, especially when you're talking about the fact that he just kind of sits down and seems a little bit a little bit asymmetric, and then it takes him a while to recover to 100% after that event. That's an excellent series of observations and powerfully suggestive that we've got somewhat of a partial focal seizure that's taking place there. And absolutely, it's very difficult to diagnose something that you cannot see, in which case, if you can get familiar with the video feature of your cell phone, and when you first sense this coming on, if you can take a really good video of that, that's going to go a long way to help your veterinarian. And then what we'll do in situations like this is put together all the information we have, your observations and history, the video evidence. Oftentimes, we will do blood work on these guys, not that neurologic situations usually show up in blood work, but to eliminate potential metabolic issues that are taking place. And that gets us as close to an absolute diagnosis as we can possibly be. And when you start talking about an MRI, that's a wonderful piece of diagnostics in the hands of someone who knows what to do with it. And that would be, if we become convinced that this is a neurologic episode, then like here in our neck of the woods in central Wisconsin, we've got a wonderful board certified neurologists that can help us out with situations like this. So the video could help, and blood work could help rule out metabolic issues.
Kathy, good luck, and thank you very much for calling. You could join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Vivian in Verona. Vivian, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I have two cats. They're both about 4 years old now. They weren't litter mates. One was a cat that ran into my yard and ended up keeping it. It was a pound and 4 ounces when it came. The other cat I got at the shelter to be a playmate for the cat, and they really play a lot together. But they're entirely different in their eating habits. Shadow, the one cat, eats sort of on demand. He just eats when he feels like it. The other cat wants to eat all the time. And they're both just a tad overweight. But figuring out how to feed two cats with different eating habits is a challenge. The other problem, the cat that wants to eat all the time also throws up. And sometimes he throws up food, you know, hardly not digested. And sometimes he throws it up right in his dish because he just wants to eat all the time. And I don't know whether it was because of the shelter, maybe he didn't have quite enough food or something, but the other issue, along with throwing up, is sometimes he throws up this sort of brown slurry, and that doesn't happen as often. I try to limit their feeding during the day so that there's not that much food for cat number two. But if I'm gone for the whole day and the cats need food, that leaves me in a quandary. So my issue is, how do I feed two different cats with different eating habits? Kind of bottom line.
Boy, that's it's a challenge, and you are not alone in that challenge. I'm not sure if there are support groups for people like you, but we'll do the best that we can. A suggestion that you may run across if you go out and do some research on this is they make RFID feeders, in which case each cat wears a tag that when they approach the feeder, a volume of food will be dispensed for them. I don't recommend that for a number of potential behavioral issues, in which case I think the only approach that I can think of, or an approach that I can think of that could potentially help you out in this situation, is to, one, feed them separately, literally in separate rooms, separate dishes with the doors closed, so each cat has a shot at their food when they have access to the food, and then create as many feeding events as you possibly can according to your schedule. For example, you know, when you wake up in the morning, separate the cats in separate rooms and here is food available to you. When you come home from work, do the same thing. Before you go to bed, do the same thing. So that for the cat that is the grazer, then he has food available to him on multiple different occasions. So he's still able to graze, but not all day long. And then the gobbler no longer has food available to him all the time, but he has food available to him on multiple occasions.
Hmm. There you go, Vivian. Thank you very much for calling. I suppose, do they make these feeders for cats, as you were talking about for dogs, where you can stuff something where the cat has to knock it around to get the food out of it?
See there, leave it to Larry. When it comes to cats that are gobbling up their food and eating very quickly, we've talked on a couple of occasions about the food delivery devices like the puzzle bowls and treat balls and stuff like that. Yeah, that's an excellent idea for the cat that eats so quickly and so aggressively that he turns around and regurgitates.
Vivian, good luck. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Cal in Sugar Camp. Hi, Cal.
Hi, I just have two real quick questions. What was the name and the spelling of the animal food, the pet food place that you recommended that was here in Wisconsin, and do they make cat food?
They do. It is from FROMM.
Two M's. Okay. There you go. And they make it for both dogs and cats. So, Cal, thank you. Mike and Sun Prairie, well, your turn. What's on your mind?
Hey, Larry. I have two male cats. I've had them for quite a while. And one of them, an orange tabby, for the last few years now, has been starting to urinate in the basement quite a bit. We've done everything from try to keep the litter clean, to dissuade him from certain spots. And I'm not sure why he's doing. He's done it sporadically throughout the house, but has two spots in the basement that he seems to love to frequent. And when we did move in there, there was quite an odor of, I think they had a dog in the basement, and we did our best to clean the carpet and zero raz. We brought professionals in. I don't know if it has something to do with that, but looking for ideas on how to dissuade he's got to be a 9 or 10 year old cat now from urinating, and he has multiple litter boxes. So we feel like we've tried everything from a litter box standpoint, but just can't get him to stop urinating in a couple specific spots in the basement.
Oh boy. And so, Mike, I assume that you even put litter boxes in those places that he's violating, and he goes on either side of the new litter boxes in the area?
So we just started that, actually. That we're kind of down to our last straw, and that we just started. And it doesn't seem to be stopping him. And we've done multiple litter boxes in the basement, in the exact spots.
Okay.
I even made like an oversized litter box out of an old tote and just trying to make it as convenient as possible for him, and doesn't seem to be stopping.
Oh boy. One of the greatest challenges that we face as pet owners and veterinarians attempting to help you guys out. And when I speak to clients who are wrestling with inappropriate urination issues, one of the things that I always start the conversation is by saying that you have to throw away the notion of, oh, that can't be it, because we've always done it that way. And of course, searching to ensure that there is no medical underpinnings for the situation, like a urinary tract infection. And I bet you've done that already. And then all of the parameters having to do with the litter boxes, I've seen make a big difference. And I'm sure you've been through all this, unscented litter, uncovered litter boxes, multiple locations, multiple litter boxes, multiple locations, as in on every floor of the house. The enzymatic cleaners can make a difference to help you clean up the odor that has been there. But it sounds as if you've also done those things already. The other two things that are kind of our Hail Mary approaches are, I spoke earlier about feel away, the pheromone that we plug in that has made a difference for cats that are experiencing territory issues and inappropriately urinating. The feel away can make a difference. And we have had cats that insist on inappropriately urinating that behavioral modification drugs like fluoxetine, which is Prozac, has made a difference. But man, we've done battle against this before, and you've got a heck of a challenge, and you've done a lot of great things already.
Yeah. Good luck, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. The other option that I did was to jackhammer out the basement floor lowered.
So long as the cat's not averse to loud noises.
Lowered the floor 2 feet and then put new cement down for a variety of reasons, but one of them was that. But not the main one, though. Liz in Dodgeville called to say she's wondering which probiotics to use for her dog who has gastritis. Can she give her dog human probiotics? And she always gives her dog frozen marrow bones. Is that a good idea?
Well, I would be careful with frozen marrow bones if your dog is having ongoing gastrointestinal issues. And can you give dogs human probiotic products? Yes, you can give them human probiotic products, but if I'm in Dodgeville, I'll ask the good folks over at the Dodgeville Veterinary Service what their recommendation is, just to ensure availability. And they're not all created equally, but they're all pretty darn good.
We have, Denise in Elkhorn emailed. Her daughter has a half English bulldog, half boxer, 9 years old. Occasionally will shake almost like an epileptic episode, wondering what that might be or should it be treated. Sometimes it will go on for 15 minutes or more, the shaking.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, if this is something that goes on for 15 minutes or more, it very well could be an epileptic episode or another neurologic situation, and not dissimilar to the nice lady from Cassville who called, who described a dog that was also having what could be a neurologic slash epileptic episode. And the things that we look for, the things that we recommend that people do, is to journal them. How often do they take place? How long do they last? How impactful are they? How long does it take them to recover from the event? That's a really big deal. And the other thing that can help your veterinarian a great deal is, once again, if you can get a good video of it, that can help us a lot.
And finally, in the last 40 seconds or so, what are some of the remedies for bad breath?
Oh, boy. Good dental health, obviously, is at the top of the mark. And if you have a dog, if you have a bully breed or something with big floppy lips, attending to the health of those folds and keeping them dried out and disinfected can make a big difference. And the other thing is, on the south end of a northbound dog is anal glands. And if your dog has a tendency to scoot and lick, and the odor of the breath is kind of like tuna in a copper bowl, then it may be necessary to pay attention to their anal glands.
Well, on that happy note, I want to thank you, Bill, so much for being with us. I mean, you do such a wonderful job, and we really, and I know our listeners really appreciate it. Thank you, and I hope we can do this again soon. Thanks, Bill.
You bet, Larry. We'll see you.
Dr. Bill Stork, the owner of Lake Mills Veterinary Clinic. He's authored 3 books. Take a look. I've had a lot of fun reading his books. They're wonderful. You can just find them online, I'm sure, or go to your local bookstore and say, I want to see Dr. Bill Stork's books. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk about the firewood banks that are popping up around the U.S. to help people stay warm. And then we hear how researchers are finding trees tough enough to withstand lightning strikes. That's interesting, and that's tomorrow. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.